Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Notre Dame head coach Kevin Corgan, whose Fighting Irish are 9-1, ranked number one in the Cascade Maverick Media Poll, as well as the USILA Division I Men's Coaches Poll. And they're coming off of a dramatic victory over North Carolina in South Bend. Coach Corgan, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. And to start, the question that I have for you is essentially, how pleased are you with the way that your team has progressed in the six games since losing to Denver in early March?
Well, Terry, I think, you know, it's hard to be too displeased, you know. We continue, you know, week after week to be playing, the, you know, these top 15 teams and coming up on the right side. So, you know, I mean, one thing I know for sure is our team has just a tremendous competitive spirit. And I love the way they compete. And that's even in practice every day. And the other thing I think I would say is that I don't know that I've had a team that practices as well as this team does. Not a lot of drama. They just show up and get their work done every day. Enjoy it, you know, enjoy being with each other, enjoy competing in practice every day. And I think that really, more than anything else, is what gives you a chance to just continue to be consistent and to consistently improve. So I hope that's the path that we're on for the rest of this year.
The follow-up to that I wanted to ask is something I was thinking about this morning, and it really applies more to you and your staff than it does to your team in general, in my opinion, because, you know, when you kind of analyze the recent run of success that's bordering on a decade in South Bend, your runs in the NCAA tournament have come from seasons that were very similar to this, where heading into late April, you're playing for seeding and momentum heading into the NCAA tournament. But, you know, last year and in 2010, the situation was different with the respect of having your back against the wall. And I'm curious, as a staff, how do you regard the way in which it's different, knowing that you have a little bit of a cushion this year that you didn't have last season?
You know, I think it goes back to my previous point, and that is, you know, when we had our back against the wall in those previous seasons, one of the things that does is it really kind of motivates everybody on a daily basis. And you know, listen, everybody always wants to win on Saturday afternoon when the whistle blows. But the question is, how well did you prepare yourself to be in that moment and you know, throughout the week? I think, you know, more than anything else, when you have your back against the wall, everybody comes to practice on Monday going, what do we need to do? What do I need to do? How do we get better? And on Tuesday, the same thing, and on Wednesday, the same thing. Well, if you have a team that's doing that and they don't have their back against the wall, I think the effect is the same. I think it really goes back to just having those right kind of practice habits, the right intensity and focus, throughout the week that allows you to be at your best on game day.
Talking about the personnel that you're dealing with in particular, you know, one of the places I want to start is a place that traditionally would have been the obvious place to start when talking about Notre Dame, and that's at the goaltender. And when you look at the way in which your offense and defense compare in terms of the rest of the nation efficiency-wise and on the raw scoring data-wise, you know, it seems like maybe the pendulum has swung toward the offensive end of the field as far as strength goes this season. But one of the things that I see, you know, as I've been able to watch you from afar, is the steady goalie play has, in contrast to the beginning of the season, it seems to me, kind of solidified Notre Dame's ability to pursue an identity that you guys have firmly established over the course of the last decade or so and seem to be very comfortable with. So in what respect do you regard Shane Doss as kind of putting a stamp on the position as being a hinge point for this season?
Well, I mean, obviously it's really hard to play at a consistently high level without good goaltending. It's been done, but it's extremely difficult. So having some consistency and reliability in that position, I think, really allows everyone else to play, you know, more consistently. And consistency in defense is there are two things, consistency and playmaking. I tend to lean towards consistency, just because you can get, you know, guys of any talent level to be, you know, really consistent at a high level in their decision making, you know, and if you can do that, then then they're going to be consistently good defensively, and you're going to be hard to score against as a team. You know, playmaking is more of an individual thing. It's, you know, some instinct and some you know, understanding and some you know, talent and physical ability that allows you to do some things. And obviously, the more of that you add to the consistent decision making, the better you are. When you know what you're getting out of the goalie position, you know what you can give up. And when you know what you can give up, you know what you're defending, and you know what you're willing to give up, and that helps. Because if you're trying to take away everything, you're going to be in trouble. So I think it all plays in together. And listen, that's even true about the other end of the field. You know, I mean, whether you're whatever kind of offensive team you are, that affects what kind of defensive team you are. It's really hard to be, you know, everything all the time. And so, you know, you really have to have a sense of yourself. You know, Syracuse back in the day used to be considered these great offensive teams that didn't play good defense. And that wasn't true. They just played a different kind of good defense. You know, they were willing to make a lot of plays. They were willing to take a lot of risks. They were willing to force a lot of action because they felt like if the tempo of the game was at the right pace and everything, that at the end of the day, they would make more plays and be where they wanted to be. And so, you know, they had defensemen that would get beat, but, you know, they'd also make a lot of plays over the course of the day. So, you know, that was a good, you know, they fit together the way they played. And I think that's important. So whether you're talking about the goaltending, whether you're talking about the offense, you know, or the defense, you know, I think you have to have a sort of a cohesive idea of what you want it to look like altogether.
It makes perfect logical sense, and I think one of the things that becomes a hindrance for folks who aren't around the program or see you play every game or understand, you know, get an opportunity to sit in the team meetings and understand what the goals and objectives are, you know, the reputation can be difficult to overcome. So it's almost as if the idea of, you know, Notre Dame's well-defined reputation for being not matchup conscious defensively and you know, quick to help and all of the things that we've talked about for so long, while those principles, you know, may still remain just as true or may have been adjusted in a way to complement the other changes that the roster has undergone, the thing that I continue to kind of think about is just the way in which the players are doing the things that the coaches are asking them to do. And so just kind of moving up the field a little bit more, the second question that I have about the individual personnel is Notre Dame has a legacy of, you know, top flight, first team All-American type defensemen. And I'm curious to what degree you see Matt Landis and Garrett Eppel fitting into that equation.
Well, I think they may be as good as any two defensemen we've had here. You know, Matt's a year older and a little farther along, maybe. And they're different. They each have, you know, some individual strengths that are different than the other guys. But they're both terrific defensive players. And it starts with, you know, their kind of intensity level. They're engaged. You know, every second that the ball is down at that end of the field, they're great. In terms of the decision making that they do, and then physically, they both work extremely hard to be able to, you know, do the things they need to do in terms of guarding people and playing off ball and getting the ball off the ground and doing those things. So I don't know that we've had, you know, guys that are any better than those two. I think Matt Landis is playing at a really, really high level right now. I don't know we've had a guy ever play any better than him. But I say that knowing that Mike Iorio was just an absolutely phenomenal defensive player. Todd Rassus was a phenomenal defensive player. DJ Driscoll was a phenomenal defensive player. I mean, we've had a long line of guys that have played at a really high level, but I think I can put Matt with any of them very favorably. And Garrett too. I mean, he's just, you know, as I said, he's a year younger than Matt and maybe a year behind him in his development, but certainly on the path to being one of the absolute best defensemen in the country.
Switching to the offensive end of the field, is there anything unique about the way in which you guys have produced, given the, I guess when I think about the Notre Dame teams that I've watched in the recent past, the playmaking has been and initiation has been relatively equal between the attack and the midfield, attacking from up top and attacking from behind. But with Connor Doyle and Matt Kavanaugh having demonstrated such a proficiency for getting defenses spinning, it strikes me that this team starts from behind or with the attack, with the ball and attacking stick, whether that be on the wing or behind, a little bit more frequently. Is that a fair characterization? And if so, do you think that that's intentional or just a product of kind of you got to get those guys their touches.
Well, I think we've got a more balanced team all around, and so you know, do we initiate more from the attack than we did, you know, 5 years ago? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we've never had an attackman better than Matt Kavanaugh, and if we have one, have had one as good, it might be Tyler Doyle. So, you know, he's you know, those two guys are gonna certainly have a part of our offensive identity, no matter what it is. But I think if you really look at us, where we initiate from and where we generate our offense, I mean, I think we're pretty balanced. And I think our approach is that, you know, listen, you know, it doesn't matter if it's short stick D-middies, if it's, you know, our first midfield or second midfield or our attack group, you know, we want to, you know, play the, you know, offense with an idea of kind of constant pressure on the defense. And if we can do that, then there's going to be a ton of opportunities for everybody. And where that constant pressure starts is almost more about the flow of the game than it is about the particular personnel.
Notre Dame is shooting third best in the country at 35.8%. How much of that do you chalk up to the way in which you guys technically practice shooting over the course of the week? And how much do you chalk it up to the types of shots you try to work for as a six-man offense?
Yeah, I think it probably has a lot more to do with just the quality of shots we're getting and the poise of the guys that we've had, you know, taking those shots and in the moments, you know, they've just been very efficient. And so, you know, we don't do anything special in shooting in practice. I mean, we try to practice each week the kinds of shots that we're going to get that week, you know. But it's nothing that's, you know, radical or groundbreaking. But you do want to make sure that your guys every week are understanding of each team is a little bit different defensively, and each team is a little bit different stylistically, and what are the kinds of shots that you think you're going to get that week. And, you know, you want to, that's partly, you know, working on the execution of those particular shots, but it's partly just putting your guys into a mindset of these are the things that are probably going to be available to you. You need to be kind of on watch for these kinds of opportunities.
One of the things that stands out as you kind of analyze this season is the proficiency that you've shown in 1-2-0 games, 4-1 in those games so far this season, and particularly coming off of a North Carolina win in which you were trailing by two with less than 2 minutes to go, a really harrowing comeback. And I think, you know, a lot of folks turn to Matt Kavanaugh as somebody who in his 3 years on campus has scored a fair amount of goals, you know, in those types of high-pressure, low-clock situations. And obviously, you know, Jack Neer's goal against Syracuse is another one that stands out to show that it's not simply one man's responsibility. But as a coach, how comforting is it to know that you have a team that knows how to navigate those situations? You talked earlier about the fight that this team and the competitive spirit has shown, and I would imagine that that's one of those elements of realizing that, you know, when Luke Goldstock scores that goal to go up 14-12, you know, that doesn't mean that the game is over, but that does mean that you're going to have to execute in a even more efficient way than you would have if he hadn't scored that goal, for example. So, you know, how comforting is it to know that you have a squad that has shown the capacity to do that?
Well, I mean, you know, I think for everybody, it starts with the idea that, you know, you compete until the last second, and you know, there just is no other, there is no other model. There, you know, I mean, that's just a given. But that's easier said than done. You know, I mean, the other day with a minute and 30 seconds, North Carolina had the ball behind the goal. With a short stick guarding the ball. You know, that's a situation where a lot of teams could kind of, you know, slump or, you know, just kind of relax and think, okay, we're down two. We're not going to get a chance at this one. So, you know, regardless of what happened after that, you know, it starts with just the mindset that, listen, we've got a plan for this situation. We know what we're going to try to do. Everybody's on the same page, and we're not going to quit with whatever that plan is until the horn goes off, you know. So I think it's partly practicing the execution of these things and giving your guys a comfort level that, listen, whether the plan works or not, the guys need to know there's a plan. They need to know that we're prepared for that, and that, you know, they've had the reps, you know, to to execute whatever we're going to try to do. But it's also, you know, I mean, it just, you know, there's good players make things look right, you know, and so having guys who are competitors like Matt Kavanaugh or you know, in this instance, you know, Matt Landis, who, you know, and Brennan Collins, who jumped the ball behind the goal and forced a sequence of events that lead to, you know, a penalty at the other end of the field. You know, just his guys, you know, competing and in a poised way that allows them to execute as well as to put great effort out there.
I love the idea. You have to have a plan, whether it works or not. Definitely one I'm going to incorporate into, you know, my daily life. But, you know, talking about this Carolina game in particular, you mentioned the penalty, and it was certainly something that a lot was made of. But before that even, it's kind of funny, Matt Bocklet I was speaking to about this game, and he made the comment that he just loved watching it because he was pleased with the physical way in which the refs allowed the game to unfold. So how do you kind of regard that, the fact that it was a highly physical game, and then the fact that, you know, one of the significant plays down the stretch was a call that, you know, was kind of controversial? Do you have a reaction to whether or not you thought it was the proper adjudication of the rule?
Listen, we got a call earlier in the game that was a 1 minute non-releasable penalty for a very physical play that I don't think was high. I know it was from the front, and I know it wasn't late. So, you know, the officials made that call, and that was a two-goal swing in the middle of the game. People tend to remember the last play of the game, you know, or the play made with a minute and 20 seconds, a little bit more than the play that was made in the second quarter. But a two-goal swing is a two-goal swing, right? And so, you know, I thought the officials did a very good job in that game. I thought that was a well-played, you know, game played at a very high level by both teams. I thought that there was some physical play, but it didn't get out of hand, and the officials did a nice job of not, you know, throwing flags all day. You know, I you know, when watching the replay of that game, you could look at a couple things here and there on both sides. I would have said, oh, that might have been a foul, or this might have been a foul. But over the course of the day, I thought the officials were very consistent. You know, and it wasn't a game that was played out of control or anything else. I thought they did a nice job of not getting in the way of a very well-played game and not calling a lot of penalties either way. I mean, that foul at the end of the game is the only time we were man up all day. So, you know, it's not, I don't think in a game like that anybody has too many complaints.
And it really was a remarkable game, and I think that, you know, in some capacity, it just underscores the, you know, strength and competitiveness of the ACC. And here you are, 4-0, heading into the cauldron that is the ACC tournament. I'm curious, do you guys set a goal of finishing the season, either, you know, the regular season ACC champions or anything to that effect?
Not anything we ever talk about. We don't have any goals because I guess I started a long time ago working backwards off of the idea that, have you ever played a game that you didn't want to win? And so I don't understand hanging a goal of ACC champion because, well, of course you want to be ACC champion because you never play a single game that you don't want to win. So if you win all of them, then you're ACC champion. So why make a goal of ACC champion? So to me, I work backwards all the way to the point of saying, you know, what's really the goal? What's really the goal is for us to get the most out of every single day and get done on that day exactly what that day needs. You can't win games on Tuesday, and you can't practice on Saturday. And so, you know, if the goal is on Tuesday to have a great practice, to get better, to learn more about what you want to do on Saturday and be better prepared, then that's a good Tuesday. And if the goal on Saturday is to take the things that you've accomplished during the week and learned throughout the season and, you know, and apply them to that game and play at a high level, you know, with you know, all the requisite things, and then that's a good goal for that day. So our goal is just to really play every day and do things every day. But it, you know, because that allows us to extend it off the field too, Terry. We you know, whether it's, you know, listen, if we're mentoring over at Dickinson Middle School, you know, we want to be as good at that as we can be. Let's be engaged in that. Don't be there thinking about the test you have later or the practice that we have later or the game that we have Saturday. Be there thinking about what you're doing with those kids. And you know, so know, that to me just seems to make sense as a goal. And then it's real simple. We only have one goal. Let's get the most out of what we're doing right now every single day.
Inside the Cross Podcast.